Hi, we are Angie and Annalie, and this is Brain Basement, a podcast where two friends who used to do yoga together in a basement now chat about chaos and wellness. As moms, we understand chaos. As expats, we get what that chaos looks like when you take it overseas.
From Manila to San Jose, we share stories of living abroad and explore topics around mental and emotional well-being. This podcast is for expat moms who want to find wellness amidst the chaos of everyday life. Welcome to Brain Basement. We're so glad you're here. Brain Basement, here we are. Annie, what am I saying, Annie? I combined our names.
Yes, that's us, Annie.
Angelie. We're here. Both of our names start with Ann, but mine is Angie, and Annalie is here. And so glad you're joining us today. We're going to talk about labels and identifying labels. Are they helpful or not? Once again, I expect we will have no answers for you, but we can just have all the questions in this discussion. So I'm thinking labels like ADHD, or knowing I have anxiety, or I struggle with depression, or I'm on the spectrum. What are other labels? Like, I have a sleep disorder. I have a processing disorder. Labels that we can really identify and determine, and then how they can help us understand more about ourselves, or how they can also become sort of part of our identity that we hold on to and cling to, maybe even sometimes when we're leaning on them, on those labels. So before we get into that, let's let go of all the labels that we might be putting on our day of stressful or busy or too much going on, and kind of feel the release of those labels and take some deep breaths. Let's go for 3 deep breaths while you're here. So just seeing if you can feel being present in your body, letting your hands, your fingers, your toes relax, softening your face, and feeling that breath moving through your body, the fullness of your lungs and your belly, and the release and softening as you empty your lungs, blowing the air out. Seeing if you can just soften into this presence in this moment. Joining us here and checking in with your body. Listening to your mind, seeing what comes up. Listening to your body. And then slowly coming back to join our conversation with that presence that we have now, just a few deep breaths can bring. Okay, let's talk about labels.
All right, let's do it. Labels. What are your first thoughts? You showed me a book yesterday over text.
Oh, right. I sent that to you because I knew I was going to forget the title and the author. I've been thinking about this since reading this book on the DSM, which is the diagnostic. It's like the Webster's Dictionary for mental health issues. So I think of this from my psychology classes in college, you use the DSM is how you can define exactly when someone can be put into the label of qualifying as clinically depressed or having a sleep disorder. ADHD was not in the DSM several versions ago, and now we are. So we have new versions of the DSM, and people refer to it as the DSM-5 and the DSM-4 or DSM-2. The book that I read was the history of how this book originated, the DSM, and as doctors and science were trying to make sure that we had an accurate definition of how to determine when someone had this label, let's say anxiety, rather than just someone who is nervous or more of a worrier, rather than it just being kind of part of your personality, when it would be defined as a concern or a medical level of presence within you that we would determine clinically someone has anxiety. And so it's really interesting historically to look at all of that. And I think a lot of now about on the spectrum, and autism is something so many of us are aware of, and that's become very much part of our culture, that hopefully most people are embracing the understanding that people's minds work differently. We are not all robots. We do not all operate on the same ideas of what, I don't even know how to begin to explain. So I'm not the expert here, but I really like the idea that all of our minds work differently. And I remember from childhood and before we had these labels, that I would meet people and just kind of notice, wow, that person's a little different. They see things differently, and their mannerisms are different, and they're super focused on this one topic, which seems to be the only topic that we discuss for a whole year when I was in a classroom with someone who most likely would have been on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. But we didn't have that label. And we didn't need it at the time, but it is helpful to understand that we're all different. So I'm wondering, do we need like more labels? Should there be 20 labels of how our minds work of someone who's a creative thinker? Okay, talk, Annalise, sorry.
No, I love this topic. I feel like there's so much to say. Because like you said in the beginning, I see labels being so helpful. I guess I could explain maybe some of those ways I see it being helpful. And as you were explaining, like how ADHD and autism, some of these labels didn't exist a few years ago, I think of the loved ones that I have in my life that have some of these, I don't know, we might categorize them as mental health disorders or a part of like a neurodivergent spectrum, right? And it helps me in relation to them when I know that about them. So I think just as far as like the world turning around for us as like communities and families and cities, to when we acknowledge that people think differently and that our brains are operating differently, for me, if we can put a name on that, I think there's room to have more grace, more compassion, more understanding, because it's not just like, well, I just don't get that person, or I just don't relate, or I don't know where they're coming from, or we're so different. But, you know, my spouse's aunt, she's passed away, but she had Asperger's. And it was very noticeable. But she was high functioning, and it was just helpful to look at her and view her through that lens of Asperger's. And I feel like there was more compassion, more understanding from the family around her and her needs, because there was a name available that we could give to it, as opposed to, I don't know, that's just Aunt Patty, you know? So that's one aspect of it. Do you have anything to say that comes to mind about that?
Were you gonna say? I think you're right. I think that is helpful. And I wonder if it's more helpful to like an older generation who might have less understanding of any neurodivergent, but I wonder if the younger generation, do we need the label? You're just like, I know Aunt Patty exactly for who she is. Mm-hmm. I know her exactly how she is. And without a label, could we just know her for her?
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, maybe her differences might be more noticeable. So it's like the first two times you meet and talk with Aunt Patty, you start to see, okay, I know exactly who I'm talking to and that I'm going to get straight from the heart answers that maybe aren't the most polite or, you know, socially acceptable training kind of responses.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's an interesting thought. And I think there's a case for both sides. Mm-hmm. I think about this in terms of like, I'm filling out school applications for my kids again. And usually like the last question is there anything else you want us to know about you? And I love that question because it's like a parent's opportunity to say, yes, actually, my child is super sensitive about this. And I need you to know that going into this school year, because if you don't know that, then you might not be prepped for how they might react if they see a spider or something, which, yeah, just very, they react very off the charts when they see a spider. But if they aren't prepped beforehand, that situation might be a little bit more bumpy or not handled as well. Or I think of my son's food allergies. Like that's, I feel like, of course, the teachers need to know about that. Mm-hmm. But I guess I just see this as being really helpful. Like this is who you're working with.
Yeah.
And there are special things about them that will help you talk to them, relate to them, react to them. And they might react to you in a way that you need to know comes from this.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess this morning I'm seeing it in a really, it's like a really positive thing. And I have a story if you want to hear it.
Yes, I want to hear a story.
Okay. This is also a story that's pro-label, but I think we should talk about the other side too. But like when I had postpartum depression, there were, I don't know how many months passed, maybe one or two, where I had all the symptoms, but I didn't know what was going on. And I blamed myself for a lot of the time. Like I'm not doing something right, or I'm doing too much of something. Like this is on me and I can change this. Or I should be able to change this. Why can't I stop this inside of myself from happening? So when I finally met with a therapist, she gave it a name and said, yeah, you do have a form, like all your symptoms, everything's tracking towards postpartum depression and even some OCD. And I got off that call and I was just like, thank you. Like, okay, I'm not going nuts, or maybe this isn't on me. And she explained how this is like a sickness, as if you broke your arm, and just all of that conversation really helped me have a lot more self-compassion for myself and giving it time for healing. And so having a name was like a lifeline. Mm-hmm. So that's my story that goes with pro labels. And I see that it can be super helpful in that way, especially with some of these illnesses and disorders that you can't see,
mm-hmm.
Because if something physically outside of me is broken or bruised or bleeding, we can, everyone can say, like, you're hurt, you're sick. But these silent kind of inner struggles, I think can send us for a loop sometimes, especially if we've never experienced them before. And it's easy to say, I'm just in a funk, or it's because I'm not exercising, or just kind of go down that path of self-criticism, which mm-hmm. can get really dangerous when layered on top of some of these illnesses.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And then, so I love your, thank you for sharing your pro-label story, your experience of recognizing, okay, now this makes sense, right? You have that label, and especially when we have a doctor or someone in authority or someone who knows what's happening, tell us that, I think it can feel like such a relief. If we have a child who's struggling with learning and then an expert says dyslexia, you just feel like, oh, that makes so much sense. And depending on the age and understanding of your child, they can feel also, okay, it's not that I'm dumb. It's not that I will never be able to read. You know, having that label, they can understand, okay, this is the way my brain works. So when I'm reading, I need to do it this way, or look for the letters this way, and dysgraphia. And these labels can be so helpful in understanding. And I think our culture sort of has the idea of disease or disorder. I really don't like either of the, like, ADD is like anything that has the word disorder sounds like something's wrong. And I kind of, just to like play around with the idea, when I was reading the book, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night, which mm-hmm. is written from the perspective of someone who has autism, I wondered, what if that is the most high functioning brain? What if being able to drive past a field and immediately identify how many brown cows and how many white cows there are, and being able to say exactly what you're thinking without any socialized concepts about what is appropriate to say, but just being able to honestly say, this, you know, like, you're annoying to me, or just saying something that we are socially told, don't ever tell someone you're annoying to me, because that could hurt their feelings. Being able to say that, what if the autistic brain is the most functional brain and we all have the disorder, the rest of us whose brain doesn't work that way, and sort of we're claiming ourselves as the majority and then defining that as quote unquote normal. And so anyone who has a different way of thinking is abnormal. And I would just like to see more of understanding, okay, we're all doing things differently. Some people learn to read this way, some people learn to read that way. And either there should be a lot more labels or a lot less. I would just like to see us all have some more understanding that there are differences there. And then I think the darker side of it, or the other perspective, can be when we just own that. There are so many days I wonder, if should I have myself tested for ADHD? Mm-hmm. I definitely feel like I qualify for ADHD in the way my mind is distracted. And then I wonder, is it because I live in an age of phones and alarms and too much going on? If I didn't, would I be able to be more focused? Is it the way my brain has developed? Who knows? But would it be helpful for me to have that label or not? Or I just kind of already know mm-hmm. sort of how my brain is working and accept that. And do I need a test to define it for me? I don't know.
Yeah. So I love what you're saying about like increasing our terminology and language around these terms. Even during this conversation, as I'm using the word disorder, illness, it actually doesn't feel comfortable to me to label some of these things as such. And like, I'll be the first to say, like, I want to learn more about the appropriate language and modern language around some of these capabilities, I want to call them, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I'm looking at neurodivergent right now, and it says neurodivergent refers to an individual who has a less typical cognitive variation, such as autism, ADHD, dyslexia, et cetera. So it's not even including, you know, like, I feel like depression, anxiety, some of these other things still feel to me more comfortable calling them an illness, but some of these other things like you're talking about, that could very well just be like these capabilities and these really important ways of cognitively working with the world and viewing the world need another name. So I'm grateful that this term is now more widely used and accepted of neurodivergent.
Yeah, me too. I like neurodivergent. And then I wonder too, if can we get so stuck on our label that we just claim that if I am a person with anxiety, I just decide that is the reason that I can't go to parties. It's because I have anxiety, and the reason that I don't make a lot of new friends, and the reason that I always struggle at parties, or, you know, do we lean on it too much once we have a label? Does that happen? Do we decide to own that for life, or can we have anxiety for 5 years and then have 5 years where we don't have anxiety, or we go in and out? How does it all work once we have that label? Is it there for life?
Absolutely. I think we can get attached to these, and like you said earlier on, that it becomes who we are versus something that's happening to us. And it reminds me of the work of Susan David around emotional literacy, how she talks about one of the important parts of talking about our emotions is, well, she makes the point that the words we use around our emotions are really important. And they might seem very, very subtle, but even those little subtleties matter a lot. So the example she gives is like, when we say, I am anxious, she says, instead of saying, I am anxious, try something like, I feel anxious, or I am experiencing anxiety. And that tiny little shift of going from saying, I am something, to this thing is happening to me, meaning it might not be happening tomorrow, it might not be happening in 2 weeks, or it might circle around and happen again. And the whole idea is that these emotions and labels are fluid, and that they don't have to define us. And like, I'm Anna Lee, and sometimes I experience anxiety. Like she says, that is a healthier way to talk about at least our emotions.
That makes so much sense to me. So can we apply that to kids? I'm a kid, and sometimes I experience dyslexia. I'm a kid, and sometimes I experience ADD, or are we just, is that too much?
I mean, I'm related to, I have nephews that are dyslexic. And luckily they live in an area where they have amazing support, and it's actually become a really positive thing for them. And so the way that they've been taught around their dyslexia is that there's nothing going wrong, that they think differently, they process differently, and they have special tools to be able to read, and they're different than other kids in their classroom. For those terms, my personal opinion, and I'm not like a psychiatrist, so this is going down as Annalie's very non-expert opinion, but it doesn't sit with me as well to say that as we would say it with emotions, because if someone's dyslexic, I don't know a lot about dyslexia, but as far as I know, it's something that you carry with you throughout your life, but you can learn tools to overcome that or to work with it and around it. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends on the level. That's why this is so interesting, right? I remember my four kids, all four completely different personalities, four completely different learning styles. And as they learned to read and write, and noticing how often they reversed letters or wrote kind of in that mirror reflection, or if they would write an entire page in that mirror reflection, I homeschooled all four kids for a long time. So nobody needed a label to get access to school or to inform any of their teachers. So I had the luxury of kind of watching them and seeing how that developed, how long that stayed, when it went away. But it was completely different for different kids doing it at age 4 or 8 or 11 or how often. And we did not ever label anyone dyslexic. And so I to this day really have no idea.
Yeah.
This is like outing myself as a really terrible mom, but also everyone is okay. I mean, everything they do is pretty much on computers with typing. They certainly can all write by hand and are expert readers. Some of them use the dyslexic setting on the Kindle, the font, which does help the letters not move around as often. So if it was at a level that it was causing them some struggle, or that they felt like I can't do this, or I want to do this better, or something is frustrating me in my reading and writing, at that point I would have sought more expertise and support, but it was always for them very comfortable to read and write. And I didn't see anything that was enough at a level where I thought this is concerning and going to be problematic.
Yeah. I mean, this is just so interesting, because I think it really comes down to the parents, the children, working with their doctors, and just figuring out like what fits for those children, if we're still talking with it about kids. And a few ideas come to mind. Like, we have a relative who told their child that they weren't athletic, like at a young age, because they had broken their arm a few times, and they just felt like, you're extra fragile. Mm-hmm. You're not really inclined to sports and athletics. And so that child never is an adult now. And the way they talk about it now is like, I kind of wish that I would have tried sports, but the message was always given to me that I wasn't athletic. So I truly believed that, because I had, you know, we have such young and impressionable minds when we're young that we believe these trusted adults. And that was the story that this child grew up with. But looking back, now that they're an adult, like, they're actually really physically inclined, like, to get out and do stuff and be athletic and do sports. And so I just think that's interesting to think about, like, the messages that we're sending our kids when they're young. Like you were saying, like, you homeschooled your kids and those labels weren't there, and everything happened, it sounds like, as if it would have happened had there been a label, but the label was removed. And so what impact does that have on our children when they don't grow up with a certain story attached? And
yeah,
I can see it.
I think that's such a good point, Annalie. I was thinking that too when we were discussing this, like, labels in every direction, right? Like, you're not athletic, or you don't think creatively, you're good at math, or someone telling you that label and putting you in that category of whatever it is, like I'm a light sleeper, just something so mild. And then you're as an adult, right. We do that all the time. We just label, kids like you're shy. You're the shy one and your sister's outgoing or you're the smart one. Your brother's athletic. It's these labels and they can be so pigeonholing in to just define ourselves. And then we grow up and hold on to it and still think, well, I'm not athletic. It was just, or I'm a light sleeper. So I can't ever sleep on a plane and I can't, it's because I'm a light sleeper. I've always been a light sleeper. And you just kind of claim that and never even test it. What if you can sleep really well with a sleep machine? Or I did want to mention the book that I looked up. The book, it's called A History of Psychiatry's Bible, the DSM by Alan V. Horowitz. And what's fascinating about it is what year and in the revision, which year they add in different categories or, you know, definitions of now we define this as some sort of disorder or something that deserves medication. And it does sort of disturbingly line up with the companies producing a medication, which will impact this happening in the human body. And so now to get this medication around the world and out into doctors and patients' circulation, we need to have it in the DSM. So we now define this as a sleep disorder instead of just someone who has difficulty sleeping. So it just kind of, I don't want to, make any statements right or wrong, but it just kind of opens up our thinking to make sure we're just paying attention to ourselves, which I think that's really all we can tell. We can pay attention to our kids as much as we can, but also, they know what's going on with them and they can kind of feel if mom or dad, I really want help with this. I'm really struggling. It's bothering me on a daily basis. This is concerning in my life, in which case we can get further help.
I totally agree. I think it's getting curious around labels just for each one of us personally and like what a label does. Is it helping? Is it hindering? Maybe it swaps depending on the season of life. As a parent, one of my children recently has been struggling and he's opened up to me and shared some of that. And I'm so grateful for that. And I've hesitated to use some of these labels with him because he is still young and I don't know if I want to introduce some of these labels like anxiety and even depression, because in my mind, as I'm hearing him describe them, I'm like checking off these boxes like, okay, he's got anxiety, you know, and he has sleeping problems because he can't fall asleep at night. But for me, like in this current situation, I'm trying to use the words that he's using and not to say that it's wrong to use some of those words with our kids. Like you said in the beginning, we're asking more questions in this episode than making statements or giving opinions. But like for me right now, that's what feels right with my kid, is like using the vocabulary he's using. And maybe sometime down the road, you know, there will be a time where it'll be important to label something with him or one of my other kids, who knows, but
right,
it's kind of interesting to play around with and think about how these labels impact us.
Yeah. I have so much, I just want to keep talking, but we should wrap up, but I'm thinking too about, the gender labels and all of that, all of the more fluid, like sexuality labels are now becoming available and people referring to themselves as they, them, and just the option of avoiding the label female or male or girl or boy, and freeing yourself of those labels. And I know that appeals to so many young people. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're right. Like, let's just look at all of this. What labels do we apply to ourselves? How do we describe ourselves? If we just wrote down like 10 things you could know about Angie, what would you say? 10 things I know about Annalie. Like, what labels are we using for ourselves? Do we like them? Do they still fit? Are we just holding on to old labels? And just checking in on all of that.
Yeah.
A good
decision. Okay. I just have to say this one thing, and maybe we can end on this note, because we're rewatching Downton Abbey, my husband and I.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we do. But Tom Branson, the chauffeur that marries Sybil,
and
part of the family, and how he has all the prejudice that he has to get over, whatever. So we're at the part of the show where he's over his prejudice and he's talking to that girl from the country that I can't remember if he ends up getting with her. We're not to that part. But basically, she's communicating to Tom about her feelings about the Granthams and the Crawleys and how they're just like, you know, she's judging them. And he says a line to her. We just watched this last night. He said, "Yeah, anymore, I don't see labels. I just see people." And I was like, what a good quote. And he had like come so far, like Tom had come so far, because he was that person in the beginning, you know, like totally pushing against them and the culture that they came from. And anyway, so I love this discussion. I'm so glad you brought it up. I think labels are so important. And I think that they can also be a crutch that we lean on, like you said in the very beginning. So,
oh yeah, that's such a good point. Okay, yeah. So let's close on that. What is it? I just see people. I don't
see. Yeah, anything. I don't see labels. I see people.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Ah, that's so beautiful. All right. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Annalie.
Okay, bye.